big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
That sudden sickening moment when something goes wrong. Maybe it's an unexpected chemical spill at work or, you know, someone on your team suddenly looks really ill. In those critical seconds, knowing exactly what to do isn't just helpful. It can be the difference between, well, a minor scare and a full-blown catastrophe. Welcome to The Deep Dive, our mission, to be your shortcut to being genuinely well-informed. We take stacks of dense sources, articles, research, our own notes, and we basically pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge, the real insights, and we try to keep things engaging, maybe even surprise you a little. Today, we're diving deep into something really high stakes, pesticide emergencies and the rapid, informed response they demand. We've gone through a pretty comprehensive guide on this, focused on the practical side response preparedness so you don't have to. This material is just packed with vital information, and I think you're going to find some truly eye-opening distinctions in here. So let's just jump right in. When a pesticide emergency strikes, what exactly counts as first aid, and why is understanding that difference so incredibly crucial?
That's the perfect place to start, really. Because while the specifics of pesticide emergencies are unique, the basic principles, preparedness, rapid response, they're valuable everywhere in any crisis. And the guide makes it crystal clear. First aid isn't, you know, a replacement for emergency services. It's a critical bridge. Every single minute you shave off that wait time can dramatically reduce how bad things get, I say. Personal safety and first aid.
The immediate response.
Okay, so if first aid is that critical bridge, how does the guide actually define it in this context, I mean? Right. It defines first aid as the help you give before the professional medical cavalry arrives. It's that immediate right there on the scene action. But, and this is a really crucial caveat, it is absolutely not a substitute for professional medical attention. The guide hammers this home. The speed in getting that professional help often dictates the extent of the injury. And here's something vital. Self-protection. When you're giving first aid for pesticide exposure, you have to avoid direct contact yourself. That means not breathing in vapors and, critically, never going into a confined area with toxic fumes unless you have the right PPE, personal protective equipment, especially respiratory gear. Think about it. The pesticide affecting the injured person. It can injure you too, easily. You don't want to become victim number two.
That's such a powerful point. Don't become a second victim. Okay, so once that initial first aid is happening, what's the immediate next step and what info do you need ready?
The immediate next step is dialing 911. Get emergency medical help on the way. And when you make that call, the guide really stresses this. You need to tell the operator specifically that it's a pesticide exposure. Give an accurate location and, if you know it, the type of pesticide involved. And then, beyond that initial call, when the medical pros arrive, it's vital, absolutely vital, to give them the full picture. That means having the entire pesticide label, if possible, the safety data sheet, the SDS, you know, the chemicals, detailed safety info, and all the details on how the person was exposed. This complete information really helps them figure out the best treatment fast.
Oh, and one more crucial thing from the source. An injured person should never try to drive themselves to the hospital.
Right. Makes sense. Now, our source material, it lists some specific emergency contacts for California ChemTrac, Office of Emergency Services, Highway Patrol for road spills, local ag commissioners for private land incidents. These seem like great examples of the kind of network you'd need. Exactly. And it's not just about California. It really shows a universal truth for any big emergency. Effective response isn't about one person playing hero. It's more like a symphony of coordinated expertise. Multiple agencies working together, first responders, environmental folks, you name it. It underscores how different groups need to sync up, whether it's for people exposed or, you know, larger spills on different kinds of property. It kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? What similar networks exist in your own local area that maybe you aren't even aware of?
Good question. So, okay, you're safe. You've called for help. How do you even begin to figure out if someone is suffering from pesticide poisoning? Especially when, like the guide says, the symptoms can look so much like the flu or even heat exhaustion.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
The guide breaks it down into signs, things you can see, and symptoms what the person tells you they're feeling. Signs like vomiting, sweating, skin irritation, eye issues, swelling, maybe pinpoint pupils.
Right.
And symptoms could be nausea, headache, weakness, that burning feeling in the eyes, nose, mouth, throat, chest pain, aches, cramps, dizziness. But here's the puzzle, right? When those symptoms overlap so much with common stuff, how do you zero in on pesticides? The guide offers a simple key, apparently.
It does. And it's surprisingly straightforward, though often overlooked. Mm. The guide makes it clear. The key is to note what immediately came before the symptoms started, the context. It's absolutely crucial. Was the person just working with pesticides?
Right.
Were they just in an area where pesticides were applied? That's the vital clue. That helps differentiate it.
Okay, context is king. Now, knowing the general ideas is one thing, but when seconds count, what does the guide say about reacting to specific types of exposure? Like, say, if a chemical splashes in someone's eyes, or they accidentally breathe it in?
Absolutely. For skin or clothing exposure, the first thing you do is get that contaminated clothing off immediately. Then thoroughly wash the affected skin with soap or detergent and just lots and lots of water.
Yeah.
And get medical attention quickly.
Okay. And for eyes, if pesticides get in the eyes?
Flush them right away. Use a gentle stream of clean running water for at least 15 minutes. If there were contacts, flush for 5 minutes, take the contacts out, then keep flushing for another 10 minutes. And the guide is really explicit here. Do not use any chemicals or drugs in the wash water. Just clean water.
Huh. No chemicals or drugs in the water, that feels counterintuitive, maybe. Why is that?
It's a critical point. Mm. Adding anything else, even something you think might help, could actually cause another chemical reaction or introduce something new that irritates the eye more. The goal is simple. Dilute and wash away the pesticide. Don't add new problems. If the irritation is still there after flushing, definitely get medical care.
Got it. Plain water only. What about inhaled pesticides?
Priority one. Get the person to fresh air. Immediately. Move them away from the source. Mm-hmm. Loosen their clothing. If breathing stops or gets really irregular, start artificial respiration or CPR if you're trained. Treat for shock. Watch closely for convulsions and get immediate medical help.
Yeah.
And just to circle back to that rescuer safety point we made earlier, if you have to go into an enclosed space somewhere with high levels of toxic fumes, you must use an air supplying respirator. Those standard cartridge ones. They're just not enough in that situation. You need your own air supply.
Right. Serious gear for serious situations. Okay, lastly, what if someone swallows pesticides?
Oof. That presents two immediate dangers. First, the toxicity of the pesticide itself. Second, potential physical injury to the mouth, throat, even the lungs, especially if it's a corrosive product or petroleum-based. And here's a critical instruction, probably the most important one for swallowed poisons. Never make the person vomit. Unless the pesticide label specifically tells you to, or a doctor or a poison control expert tells you to.
Never induce vomiting unless told, okay.
Right. If the person is conscious and alert, have them drink large amounts of water or milk to dilute it. Then, call the California Poison Control System. That number is 1-800-222-1222 immediately, or your local poison control center. Okay. And give the medical folks as much info as possible, especially that pesticide label.
Okay, that covers the immediate personal responses. Now, the guide also talks about emergency decontamination facilities. What's the idea there?
Yeah, the core concept is setting up what they call a decontamination line. Basically, a process to prevent spreading the contamination from a dirty zone to a clean zone. Even at a minimum, the guide says you need 3 gallons of water available at the start of the workday or access to running water. Soap. And they emphasize real soap, not just moist wipes or hand sanitizer, single-use towels, and a clean pair of coveralls. That's the baseline.
That makes sense for the basics. But what about setting up something more substantial? The guide mentions a sidebar 12.2 with more detail. What's involved in a more robust setup?
Right, for a really comprehensive facility, the guide details a system built for full containment and stopping cross-contamination. Think dedicated zones. You'd have things like drop cloths for heavily soiled gear, special collection containers for disposable clothing, and PPE, maybe a lined box with absorbents for wiping things down. You'd also need large tubs or tanks for washing and rinsing, big enough for someone to stand in with boots on, connected to a collection tank, of course. Plus, long-handled brushes, lots of paper or cloth towels for drying PPE, storage lockers for the clean gear. And critically, containers specifically for the contaminated wash water, containment sheeting to catch any spills during decon, and ideally, proper showers or at least sinks connected to a treatment system, plus personal wash items and clean clothes storage. It's really a whole system designed to keep the contamination contained and protect everyone. Two, handling larger incidents, spills, leaks, and fires.
Okay, so moving from individual exposure to bigger incidents, the guide really stresses that all pesticide leaks and spills are emergencies. Doesn't matter if it's concentrated or already diluted.
Exactly. And what's particularly striking here is the constant emphasis on readiness, preparedness. The guide is unequivocal. A spill cleanup kit must be readily available wherever pesticides are handled, mixed, loaded, stored, and on transport vehicles too. You just won't have time to run around gathering supplies after a spill happens.
Yeah.
It's all about being proactive, having the tools ready before the crisis hits.
Okay, proactive preparation. So let's unpack that spill kit. What needs to be in a well-equipped one, according to the guide?
A good spill kit, as they lay it out, needs several key things. First, the immediate safety stuff. Mm-hmm. Emergency phone numbers and the right PPE gloves, footwear, apron, eye protection, and the specific respirator if the label or SDS calls for it. Then you need tools to contain the spill, like those absorbent tubes or pads to kind of corral the liquid. For soaking it up, you need absorbent materials. This could be anything from common stuff like cat litter or sawdust to more specialized spill pillows, absorbent clay, activated charcoal, vermiculite. Even paper can work for small liquid spills.
Yeah.
For dry spills, like powders, you need a sweeping compound. Then basic cleanup tools, shovel, broom, dustpan. Heavy-duty detergent is important, too. And finally, a couple of non-negotiables. An all-types fire extinguisher and a sturdy, sealable plastic container big enough to hold everything from the largest pesticide container you're handling.
Got it. That's quite a list, but it makes sense. Now, once a spill or leak does happen, what are the immediate actions?
Okay, first things first. If it's on a public road or if anyone is hurt or contaminated, that's your 911 call right there. Plus, administer first aid as needed. You also need to immediately rope off or barricade the area. Keep people away. Safety first. If the spill is indoors, evacuate everyone. Then only re-enter wearing the proper PPE to open doors and windows. Maybe use a fan to ventilate the space.
And dealing with the actual contaminated materials, how does that work?
The process is pretty precise. You have to put all the contaminated stuff, the absorbents, the soil, whatever, into a sealable drum. Label it clearly as hazardous waste, including the pesticide name and its signal word, like danger or warning. Then you need to contact your local authorities, typically the county agricultural commissioner or maybe the state's Department of Toxic Substances Control for instructions on disposal. This stuff usually has to go to a specialized Class I disposal facility. You can't just toss it in the regular trash.
Right, specialized disposal. What about cleaning surfaces, like concrete?
For concrete, the guide suggests commercial cleaning preps, or you can make a solution. About 4 tablespoons of detergent and 1 pound of soda ash per gallon of water. But big caveat, always check the pesticide label or SDS first to make sure that cleaning solution is compatible and won't cause some other reaction.
Okay. So the guide then lays out the basic steps for the cleanup itself. What are those?
Yeah, it's a step-by-step process. First, clear the area, give first aid if anyone needs it. Second, prevent fires. Some liquid pesticides are flammable, and even powders can be explosive under the right conditions. So no smoking, turn off any nearby electrical appliances or motors. Third, gear up. Wear the right PPE. If you're not sure what spilled, err on the side of caution, maximum protection.
Makes sense.
Fourth, contain the leak or spill. Stop it from spreading. This might mean transferring the pesticide to a new container if you can, patching a leak, or building dams around it using absorbent stuff like soil, sand, sawdust, clay, even cat litter. If it's a dust or powder spill, you might cover it with a tarp or lightly mist it with water to keep it from becoming airborne. Just lightly, though.
Okay. Contain it. Then what?
Then fifth, clean up the pesticide itself. Use your broom or shovel to work the absorbents into the spill. Maybe add more if needed, then sweep or shovel it all up. If it's on soil, you'll likely need to remove the top 2 or 3 inches of contaminated soil. All that contaminated material goes into your sealable hazardous waste container.
Right.
Sixth, clean the surfaces. If it was on something non-porous like concrete or asphalt, wash it down with that strong detergent solution we talked about. Clean your tools, though brooms are often just discarded. Shovels can usually be decontaminated. Then clean or dispose of your PPE, according to procedure. And finally, seventh, dispose of all the collected waste material properly, following those local regulations we mentioned.
Wow, okay. It's a thorough process. Now, what happens if things escalate even further? What about a pesticide fire? That sounds incredibly dangerous.
It absolutely is. Extremely dangerous. The guide highlights 2 immediate priorities that really show the scale of the risk. First, call 911 right away. Tell them pesticides are involved. Give chemical names. Mention the SDS if you have it handy. Second, and this is critical, clear and evacuate the area. Not just the immediate fire zone, but also downwind. There's a huge risk of toxic fumes spreading and potentially explosions depending on the chemicals. Protect animals, move vehicles and equipment if you can safely do so. And you'll likely need to contact the police or sheriff's department to help manage downwind evacuations if necessary. It really drives home how a chemical emergency, especially a fire, can rapidly become a much larger community-wide safety issue. It goes way beyond just the initial site. 3, beyond the obvious. theft, misapplication, and learning.
We've covered accidental spills and fires, but the guide also touches on something else. Pesticides being stolen. That sounds like a completely different kind of emergency threat.
It is, and this is where the human element is just paramount. The guide actually identifies trained employees and contractors as the first line of defense, calls them an alert surveillance system against theft. They need specific training in things like inventory control, keeping facilities and equipment secure, and knowing who to call in an emergency. These are the people on the ground who are most likely to notice if something's off.
So who do they notify if they see something suspicious or if there's a breach?
The procedure is typically notify local police first, then the county agricultural commissioner, and also the local FBI field office. Especially if there are threats involved or really suspicious behavior, or if you hear about exposures that just don't line up with how the product is normally used, that could indicate something illicit is going on.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly to misapplication. The guide suggests there are actually different types of misapplication. Can you break that down? Why does the distinction matter?
Yeah, it defines three main types, which is interesting. First is intentional misapplication. That's knowingly using a pesticide on a site or crop it's not registered for, or using it in a way that clearly violates the label directions.
Okay, doing it wrong on purpose?
Pretty much. Then there's accidental misapplication. This is when someone unknowingly applies it to the wrong site. Maybe they got confused about field boundaries or something.
An honest mistake, but still wrong.
Exactly. And third is negligent application. This covers things like improper calibration of equipment, mixing it wrong, using or disposing of it improperly, applying it at the wrong time, or, well, basically any other way you fail to follow the label requirements carefully. And the guide is really clear. Any of these are serious problems. They can lead to financial liability for damages, obviously. But more importantly, they pose immediate threats to people, animals, and the environment. The guide does say, though, that taking prompt corrective action can help reduce the damage and the liability. Protecting health and environment is priority one.
Right. So let's take one of those applying the incorrect amount. The guide says too little is mostly just a waste of time and money, maybe ineffective.
Yeah, generally not an immediate hazard, just bad practice.
But applying too much, that's an environmental threat, a danger to people, and it's flat out illegal. The guide says this often happens from bad calibration, mixing errors, or just not understanding the label rates. So what's the fix?
The fix, according to the guide, is immediate notification. You need to contact your county agricultural commissioner and also the pesticide manufacturer. Speed is really critical here. The longer an excessive amount sits there, the more potential harm it can do, leaching into groundwater, harming non-target organisms, etc.
Okay, immediate notification. What about applying the wrong pesticide altogether? Maybe someone grabbed the wrong jug or got bad instructions.
That carries its own risks. Beyond just potentially damaging the plants or surfaces you sprayed, it could expose workers to unexpected hazards. Maybe the pesticide actually used requires different PPE than what they were wearing, for example. That's a serious risk.
Yeah, I can see that.
The correction process is similar.
Yeah.
Contact the county ag commissioner and the manufacturer. But crucially, you also need to notify anyone who might be in or enter that application area and keep them away till you know it's safe. And the same logic applies if pesticides end up on the wrong crop. If that crop isn't on the label, or if there are workers in that field who weren't supposed to be exposed, that's a major problem. Again, notify the ag commissioner, notify the manufacturer, and keep people out of the area until it's deemed safe.
It really sounds like communication and speed are vital in correcting these misapplication issues.
Absolutely. Fast, clear communication with the right authorities and affected parties.
Okay, so accidents happen, spills, misapplications. It's an unfortunate reality sometimes, but the guide emphasizes learning from them. How does that process work? What does it mean for improving future responses?
Yeah, this brings up a really important question. Why is looking back at past incidents so crucial? The guide makes a strong case for it. Good record keeping is key. Keeping track of what happened. If you have video or photos, even better. And getting firsthand accounts from the people who are actually involved. All of this helps you and your whole team, really, understand what went wrong, the root causes, and figure out how to respond better next time. It's about that continuous learning loop.
So during that review, what kind of questions should people be asking to really get to the bottom of it, to make sure they learn the right lessons?
The guide suggests some key questions. What exactly caused the accident or incident? Which specific pesticides were involved? How did people actually respond moment by moment as it unfolded? And maybe the most constructive question, how could the response have been improved? What could have been done differently, better, faster. The guide also points out the huge value of doing emergency response drills, you know, practice runs, mimicking a fire or a spill to test how well everyone knows the plan and procedures. Then you review the records from those drills, see what worked well, where the weaknesses were. That helps you target your training and shore up any weak spots. It's all about striving for continuous improvement, making sure that if there's a next time, the response is even tighter, even safer. Outro.
Wow. Okay, so from those critical first moments of personal safety and first aid, through managing the chaos of major spills and fires, and even digging into those less obvious threats like theft or misapplication, we've really journeyed through the critical layers of pesticide emergency response today. And it all circles back to that final vital step, reviewing, learning, and getting better. And the value of knowing this stuff, it really extends beyond just the professionals handling these chemicals every day, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
For anyone who might encounter a situation like this, maybe even indirectly or honestly, just for anyone who wants to be better informed about safety protocols in their community or workplace, understanding these kinds of detailed plans makes you, well, incredibly well-informed and more capable, should you ever need to be.
Definitely. Knowledge is preparedness in this case.
So here's a final thought to leave you with as you go about your day, something to maybe mull over. What unseen preparations, like the ones we discussed today, are happening all around us every single day, intended to ensure our safety? And how might understanding them, even just a little bit, change how you perceive risk or even your own readiness in the world?
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.